Thank you very much. First, I would like to thank the organizer for getting together this splendid conference. It's very good to get a fresh overview of what's happening in the Eastern Desert, and it's very nice to see a lot of the people I worked with about 25 years ago. I also like to thank Adam Bülow Jacobsen and Stephen Seidbaum, who were the ones who back in, I think, 1989, invited me to the two sites that I'm going to talk most about. We saw so many maps yesterday, so I'm not presenting a map of the textile sites in the Eastern Desert, but instead, I will focus on that at many of the sites, textiles are one of the major fine groups. At Mons Claudianus, excavators filled no less than 12 large canteens or metal boxes with textiles. It's 1.25 cubic meter of compressed textiles, tens of thousands of dirty rags, mostly very fragmented, but a few more or less complete items of clothing, such as tunics, hats, socks, and others. They have been investigated by me, assisted by a team included Ulla Mannering, a textile archaeologist, two hand weavers, Lena Hammerlund and Martin Sitjuk, and several other specialists. At Abushan, a late Roman fort that later turned into a Christian monastery, situated some 20 kilometers north of Hurghada, Stephen Seidbaum's team found over 1,000 textiles during his excavation there in 1987 to 93. They were recorded partly by me for the first two seasons and by Nils van Waveren for the last season. And we put our data together what I present covers them all. In addition, numerous textiles have been found and recorded from at least 8 of the other sites that we have heard about. Dominique Cardon and Felicity and Jean-Peter Wild will be telling us more about those from the Presidia and from Berenike in their papers. And in addition, Gillian Fuglsang Eastwood and Fiona Handley have examined the textiles from Myos Hormos at two rather different sittings. Gillian came out with the Whitcomb and Johnson excavation in 1978-82, and Fiona Handley took part in the later excavation directed by Peacock and Blue. And Fiona Handley also investigated the textiles for Mons Porphyritis. And together, when you try to put together the numbers, it's a bonanza of finds that's supplying some enormous new potential for studying a material that normally is all too easily perishable. So this is a unique possibility to know more about Roman textiles. What did we find among the thousands of rags from Mons Claudianus, and what did we do? We did several things. This is the work of one of my hand weavers, Lena Hammerlund, set to work trying to find ways to categorize the many plain, ordinary wool tabbies, the basic weave, that in my technical description, they were identical, but there were visible differences. She was able to recreate them on her loom. Here are some examples. And she set up a system of characterization that now is being used by several colleagues also from other, working on other periods. We also established terms for stripes, checks, and various other aspects useful when you're just trying to make statistics and investigating them in larger numbers. And our two-hand weavers reconstructed a lot of the textiles. Here are some rather complicated weaves called taketi, double weave that makes some very fine patterned textiles, probably used for cushion or mattress covers. Those on the top are the originals, those at the bottom are the reconstructions, and on the far side you see Martin Sitchuk weaving them. And the reconstructions also led to an investigation of which looms were used. There are four possible looms, and Sitchuk and Hammarlund sat down to look at what are the characteristics of what, of the, each loom, and can this textile be... They tried to make what could be done on every one of them, and that makes it possible to make at least some distinction between what kind of fabrics were made on which. As regards identifiable garments, we had a few, we discovered the tattered remains of no less of three tunics. One was just for a small baby, I'm not showing that. Another, this one, was put together from an old mantle of the Himachan or Pallian type, as revealed by the gamma that was placed at various unorthodox places. The third was a tunic with clavi, the two purple bands that run from the shoulders to the bottom, and that can be seen in almost all the mummy portraits, as well as in Roman imagery. This tunic was, here they are in drawing, it was very heavily repaired. Almost all the original material had been replaced by patches, but the clavi had been meticulously preserved all through the repairs, indicating that they conveyed important information on the owner's social station. More than 200 fragments had bands of the type we have defined as clavi, and if they are used as a criterion for identification of tunics, we have a body of 149 such clavid tunic. Gammas and some other signs are similarly indicative of mantles of the Himachan type. The one on top is a drawing of a Himachan, a rectangular mantle decorated by four signs here, gammas, in each corner. We had 44 of those, but as there are four to Himachan, we can't say there were also 44 Himachans. Anyway, tunic and Himachan were the typical costume of civilians in Roman Egypt, as we can see from many of the mummy portraits. The repairs and the Himachan remade into a tunic probably represent the work of the centonarii, the rag dealers and patchwork makers that probably were supplying clothing for workers at Mons Claudianus. Two hats were found virtually complete. Here's one of them of green felt, shaped like a fez or pillbox, and like the Peleus Pannonicus that was used by soldiers in late antiquity. So, and the second cap is has ear mufflers and neck protector, and is made of triangular pieces in red, green, and yellow, reminding in shape a bit of a helmet. So both may indeed have belonged to soldiers at the site. We got other garments represented, thanks to the work of Dominique Cordin and Guihiro Granger Taylor at Didymoi. We have been able to identify remains of the semicircular hooded cloaks that were used, but I'm not showing those because I'm sure Dominique will. And we have a loincloth and several other things. But we also studied, were looking for soft furnishings. We studied Roman art to find out what kinds of soft furnishings they had. And that led us to look at things that are likely to be carpets, like this one on top and bottom, the reconstruction, and perhaps curtains, the resist-dye textiles we had, and mattress or cushion covers. There's a great similarity with the mattresses that those couples are lying on, and some of those we found. Then let's move to Abushar. I'm the only person who's speaking in any detail about that, so I'm showing Stephen Seibold's map of the fort, which was founded about 310 AD, and its career's military fort ended rather quickly before the end of the 4th century. Soon after 400, Christian monks or hermits moved in, staying until the beginning of the 7th century. The textiles from Abushar did not include any complete garment items, but nonetheless we found many interesting pieces, such as embroideries, and resist-dyed cottons, and we found tapestries of the kind called normally Coptic textiles. To some extent, the Abushar textiles resemble those from Mons Claudianus, but they also differ in many ways. One of the major differences is in fiber. At Mons Claudianus, about 90% of the textiles are of wool, 4% of goat hair, while flax and other vegetable fibers are only found in about 5%. At Abushar, vegetable fibers are much more common and include several pieces of cotton. In the early military phase of Abushar, wool is the most common fiber, but in later Christian settlement, this has been reversed. Here are some examples of the vegetable fibers textiles from Abushar. Another difference is in weaves, especially twills, en français c'est serge, that appear in limited numbers at Mons Claudianus and in the early phase of Abushar, but they're missing from the Christian settlement. At Mons Claudianus, most of the twills were plain, balanced, and made of Z-twisted yarns. You can see the twist of yarn called Z and S on the far side of the slide. At Abushar, they were mainly from S-twisted yarn, so they used different yarns. Diamond twills and other variants at Mons Claudianus were usually made from single yarns, those from Abushar from plied warp or with paired weft. But at both places, a group of twills with very dense weft appear. At Mons Claudianus, these are usually diagonal twills. At Abouchard, diamond twills. So there are some differences. At both sides, the most common selvages are either simple ones where the weft just turns around in the next head without further ado, or reinforced selvages created by wrapping the weft around groups or bundles of the outermost warp thread. At Abouchard, this is usually done over two bundles of warp threads. At Mons Claudianus, three. Details like this are likely to reflect workshop preferences and maybe make us able to throw light on the on suppliers for the sides. End borders are usually made by twisting the remaining warp into a cord. Comparing the textiles from these two sides with others offers some intriguing possibilities. As more other than I have remarked yesterday, they fall in some categories. There are ports, there are forts, and there are quarries. And they, of course, had very different types of populations. Soldiers, a variety of artisans, such as stone masons or carpenters, imperial slaves and freedmen called the familia, women, wives and prostitutes, various service trades for transport and others, sailors, and in the case of the late phase at Abouchard, monks. Most of these sites are dated within the first and second centuries, in the fourth century, and while the fifth and seventh century are represented at Abouchard. Mons Porphyritis and Berenike also cover several periods. The variety of sites makes it possible to ask several questions. One of them deals with fibers. There's a marked difference between the inland desert and the coastal sites. Wool is significantly more common at Mons Claudianus, Maximianon, and Crocodilo than at Abouchard, Myos Hormos, and Mons Porphyritis. Why so? Several alternative explanations have been investigated. A chronological development seems excluded, as Myos Hormos is contemporary with the three inland sites, while Mons Porphyritis and both phases of Abouchard are later. Another explanation is differential survival, favoring the preservation of wool fabrics in the desert. But somehow I have a weakness for explaining it as due to climate. For Abouchard and Myos Hormos are both situated on the coast. Evaporation from the sea is strong, causing the air to be humid, contrary to the dry air of the desert. So on the coast you sweat, and vegetable fibers absorb sweat. In the desert, you don't sweat because it evaporates before it reaches the surface of the skin. Instead, protection against dehydration is vital, particularly if water rations are as low as Adam Bülow-Jakobsen was mentioning yesterday. Temperature changes are violent in the desert too, so warm clothes are definitely needed for cold nights and meetings and mornings, particularly in the winter. And wool is a fiber that is eminently suited for both these purposes. There is, however, one snag. The textiles from Mons Porphyritis do not fit this explanation, as the percentage of wool there is on the same level as the coastal sites. Fiona Handley does, however, argue that the bast fibres and porphyritis were little suited for clothing, that they instead represent textiles used in the quarry. So, possibility. Another interesting aspect is the occurrence of twills. It's noteworthy that twills are much more frequent at military installations, regardless their date. At Abu Shah and the Presidia, military personnel were the predominant population group. With the monastic phase, twills virtually disappear from Abu Shah. Soldiers administered Mons Claudianus and Myus Hormus and formed an important, although relatively small, sections of its population. This indicates that twills were used for military garbs rather than civilian. Again, Mont Porphyritus does not quite fit. According to Fionn Lehendi, there are only 3% of the textiles that are silk, so all is not clear. How do the rags from Mons Claudianus and Abu Shah compare to textile riches from the Roman Egyptian towns like Antinoe and so-called Coptic textiles that can be seen in the collections of the Musée de Tussi in Lyon, at the Louvre, and in lots of other museums in the world. As we've seen, we have nothing like the luxurious the perfect, complete things that they have there. But we have just a few recognizable garments and little of the rich and colorful decoration that appears commonplace in burials at Antinoe and other sites. We have no silks. We have a few fragments of tapestry at Abu Shah, all from the late phase, which means they're after 400 AD, none at Mons Claudianus. We do, however, have scraps of resist-dyed textiles. We have piled fabrics. We have tackety and other pattern textiles, fabrics that are known in much greater quantity and more complete from sites like Antinoe. And this shows that officers and other dignitaries at Mons Claudianus and Abu Shah are likely to have had tackety cushions and mattresses, resist-dyed curtains, piled rugs, and other vestiges of civilization. So what then can we learn from the textiles from Mons Claudianus and Abu Shah, and indeed from the recent bonanza of textile finds from the eastern desert? Most importantly, we can identify a growing... the archaeological context gives us a chronological framework, enabling us to sort them into three phases: the 1st and 2nd century, the 4th century, and the 5th to 7th century. We can identify a growing number of items of textiles and soft furnishing. We may begin to divide them between different groups of owners: the Roman military, various civilians, and Christian monks. We are getting a better understanding of the technology, and all of this supplies us with a hitherto unknown foundation for building theories and substantiating arguments. In short, a wonderful new toolbox for further studies of the textiles from Roman Egypt and indeed the Roman world. Thank you.